welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, drama. Later on, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin star in The Marriage. But right now, an episode of Stars Over Hollywood from April 26, 1952 on CBS with the story, Love Can Happen to Anybody.
This is William Lundigan with a welcome to Stars Over Hollywood, presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk.
Welcome to Hollywood, home and workshop of the world's most glamorous people. Each week, Stars Over Hollywood is brought to you by Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. And today we present Love Can Happen to Anybody, starring William Lundigan. Stars Over Hollywood. And speaking of stars, here's William Lundigan.
Thank you, Art. Hello, everybody.
Well, Bill, I guess this sort of thing comes naturally to you. Didn't you get your start in radio?
That's right. At the ripe old age of 10, back at WFEL in Syracuse.
Well, how'd you jump from there to movies?
Well, a picture exploitation man was in the studio one day, and he said, if you ever come out my way, look me up. I might be able to help you. I did, and he could, and here I am.
Just as simple as that, huh?
Well, Art, there were a few steps in between, but actually, getting into pictures is one thing, and staying there is another. It's no bed of roses for any... no bed of carnations, I mean. I'm sorry, I...
Don't mention it, Bill.
And now, Act One of Love Can Happen to Anybody, starring William Lundigan in the role of Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby. Curtain going up. Story opens in the luxurious apartment of Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby, a tall, impeccably dressed, distinguished-looking young man. A large pile of canned goods, ham, smoked turkeys, caviar, and other choice viands is stacked on an ornate library table. Mr. Bixby is consulting a price list he holds in his well-manicured hand.
These mushrooms of yours, they're vacuum-packed?
Oh, yes, sir. Vacuum-packed and broiled in pure creamery butter.
Well, the price seems about right. I'm not interested in this trout fumet. I've made arrangements for imported Bavarian trout. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming. I'll try these samples you've left and place my orders with you later. Will you show the gentleman out, Lippincott?
Oh, very good, sir. This way, please.
Mr. Bixby, can you tell us when you'll be opening your new restaurant?
Oh, it shouldn't be long now. I'm waiting for Francois, the chef I'm bringing over from Paris, to arrive. I received a cable from him last week. When did he say he was sailing, Lippincott?
The 16th, sir, on the Queen Elizabeth. This way, gentlemen.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Bixby.
Goodbye, gentlemen. Goodbye. Thank you for coming. Oh, I thought they'd never go.
So did I.
What are we waiting for, Libby? Let's get these groceries into the kitchen.
Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby, I'm ashamed of you. A guy with your front, the slickest con man in the business, falling so low you have to dream up two-bit schemes to promote a few groceries. And don't forget, we owe 2 months' rent.
Lippy, my boy, you worry too much. Between now and tomorrow, something may happen, we'll be in the chips.
Yeah, or something will happen, we'll be in the clink.
Ah, that's the way you were talking the night before I took old man Swanson on that copper mining deal. That was a cutie. 10,000 smackers, remember?
I also remember you dropped the 10,000 smackers in 3 weeks. You were going to make suckers out of the bookies, remember?
Oh, well, easy come, easy go.
Yeah, well, it won't go so easy if Ironhead Gahagan catches up with you. He's plenty sore at you for pulling that copper mine swindle.
Ironhead Gahagan is a big, dumb cop who couldn't find his foot in his shoe.
I don't know, Bix. Maybe you've lost your touch.
Lippy, I told you before, you worry too much. All I need is a change of scenery. Come on, let's go for a walk. Perchance, Lady Luck will smile upon us. You know, there might be a fast buck promoting a uranium deposit.
Yeah, or peddling gold bricks to the boys at Fort
Knox. Oh, I'm just thinking out loud, Libby, trying to come up with an idea that'll
what? Look on that corner.
Ironhead Gahagan.
Lady Luck didn't smile at us. She laughed out loud.
All right, take it easy. We'll duck into this automobile agency right here.
Do you think Gahagan saw us?
No, I don't think so. Quiet, here comes the salesman.
How do you do?
May I help you?
Yes, yes. I'm in the market for one of your cars.
Fine. What type of car did you have in mind?
Well, limousine. I'd like an immediate demonstration.
Why, yes, certainly, Mr.
Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby.
Oh, this way, please, Mr. Bixby. My name's York. Now, this is truly a fine automobile. Hydromatic.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm familiar with the car. I'd like to have my man Lippincott here try it out. Get behind the wheel, Lippincott. You sit in front with him, Mr. York. I'll ride in the back seat as usual.
Now, drive right through the rear door, Lippincott, into the alley, and then turn left.
Oh, very good, sir.
While you're getting the feel of the car, Lippincott, you may as well drive out to the airport. I want to have a chat with my new pilot. I may want him to fly the governor and myself up to the lodge for a bit of fishing.
Very well, Mr. Bixby.
Oh, and by the way, Lippincott, I was telling you about Gehagen.
Yes, sir.
You know how he's been after me about that mining deal.
He's still after you, sir?
I believe he is, and I don't want to be bothered with him, so if he's insistent, tell him I'm planning to leave town for a while.
I understand,
mm-hmm. This car rides very well, Mr. York.
Oh, the smoothest riding car on the market, Mr. Bixby.
How does it hold the road at high speed?
When we get to the highway, Lippincott can step on it, and you'll see for yourself, Mr. Bixby.
An excellent idea, Mr. York. Excellent. I do a great deal of traveling by air. I thought I might as well have my own plane.
More and more people are doing that every day, Mr. Bixby.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good-looking ship, but I've heard it's rather bumpy in the air.
Oh, now, Mr. Bixby, you wouldn't say this is a bumpy ride, would you?
No, not at all. Very pleasant, in fact. Well, there's the river down there. That means we're over the state line, doesn't it?
That's right. It doesn't take long to get places in a speedy little ship like this.
Oh, my side. I'm afraid I'm getting an attack, Lippincott.
Is the pain bad, sir?
Oh, excruciating.
What's the trouble, Mr. Bixby?
Oh, my appendix.
Mr. Bixby is up and around against his doctor's orders. He was warned that his appendix might burst at any time.
Hey, I better get you back to the airport right
away.
Oh,
no. There's no time for that. You'd better land at that tower we're flying over right now.
Well, I don't know.
I do as Mr. Bixby suggests. There isn't a moment to lose.
Hurry, and Lippincott, if I should lose consciousness, rush me to a hospital.
Oh, very good, sir.
Look, Mr. York, get this through your head. My name's Gehagen. I'm head of the Bunko Squad. I tell you, Bixby and Lippincott are two of the sharpest confidence men in the racket.
It's hard to believe, Mr. Gehagen. Mr. Bixby seemed to be such a fine gentleman.
Fine crook is what he is.
That's the plane they took off in a little while ago.
Good. They probably didn't know I was following them. Oh, it's going to be a pleasure to put me mitts on them two sharpshooters. You, pilot, where are they?
You mean Mr. Bixby and his secretary?
Yes. Where are they?
Why, Mr. Bixby had an attack of appendicitis, and I landed them at the Midvale Terminal across the state line.
Oh, no. It'll be weeks before they can get extradition papers to bring him back. But I'll get him, McGally. I'll get him, and my name ain't Iron Hat Gehagen.
How do you do? You're the public stenographer?
Yes, sir, I am.
I'm Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby. I'd like to dictate some letters, please.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you. The first one's addressed to Mr. Douglas E. Hughes, President, Consolidated Utilities, 16 Wall Street. Before I begin, Lippincott.
Yes, sir?
Please tell the desk clerk I wish to rent one of the top floors. Explain to him that I have some important business to transact in Midvale, and I'll make my headquarters in this hotel during my stay.
Well, very good, sir.
Now, miss, let's get on with the letter. You have the address.
Yes.
My dear Hughes, in reply to your inquiry, I would suggest you buy the preferred amalgamated stock. I have controlling interest now and have ordered a complete reorganization. Warmest regards, et cetera, et cetera. Have you got that?
Yes, Mr. Bixby.
Now, wire, Tri-City Corporation, Chicago, Illinois. I have directed my New York office to forward draft for purchase of bond issue on terms agreed upon. Stop. Please acknowledge receipt via regular channels.
May I interrupt?
What is it? What is it, Lippincott?
The clerk informs me, sir, that an entire floor is not available just now, but he can give you a large suite immediately.
Well, all right. That'll do for the time being. I'll tell you what, Miss, what's your name?
Anne O'Hara.
Suppose I finish dictating in the suite, Miss O'Hara.
Whatever you say, Mr. Bixby.
You come up in 15 or 20 minutes. And oh, by the way, Miss O'Hara, I expect the press will want to interview me. Will you leave word at the desk that I'll have a statement for the newspapers a bit later?
Oh, yes, of course, Mr. Bixby.
Thank you, thank you. Attractive girl, isn't she, Lippy?
Keep your mind on your business.
Mm-hmm. I've always been partial to brown-eyed redheads.
Now, see here, Bix, this is no time for
romance.
Oh,
take it easy, Lippy, old boy. See who's at the door. Oh, there you are. There you are. Come in, Miss O'Hara. Come in. Or shall we dispense with the formality and call you Anne?
Anne will be fine, Mr. Bixby.
Good. I hear take this chair by the window. Lippincott, while I'm dictating, go in the next room and phone the New York Exchange. Leave word with J.M. that there's no hurry about the Atchison, Topeka, and Lackawanna deal. I'll discuss it with him when I get back.
Yes, Mr. Bixby, right away.
What is it?
The newspaper reporters are here for your statement.
Already? No, I haven't time to see them now. Tell them I'm here for a short visit during which I'll combine business and pleasure, but that I can't give them any further information for a few days. Play it cagey, Lippincott. We don't want anything to leak out until we get word from Washington.
I understand.
Oh, and incidentally, call room service and have them send up whatever refreshments the newspaper boys might want. And incidentally, Lippincott, we'll have dinner here in the suite. Arrange things so you can sign the tabs. I don't wish to be bothered.
Yes, sir.
Anne, we'll be working late tonight. You'll join us for dinner, won't you?
Oh, I'll be happy to, Mr. Bixby, but I'll have to phone my brother and tell him I won't be home.
Oh, well, of course. Go right ahead. I'll give you some more letters in a moment.
Oh, Mr. Bixby, you are a very charming man.
Now, Lippy, everything's going to be okay.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't like that funny expression you get in your eye when you look at Anne O'Hara.
Oh, quit worrying, will you?
Look, just what plans have you got up your sleeve, Bix?
At the right time, I'll let drop a hint that I've come to establish some sort of a defense plan, perhaps an aircraft factory. The public-spirited citizens won't mind getting in on the ground floor to make a fast buck or two. They'll come galloping over with nice, fresh, green money in their hot little hands, and we'll issue a stock certificate.
Mr. Bixby, sweet. Who? Mayor Walters. Yes, sir. Just a moment, sir. It's the mayor of this burg.
Give me that phone.
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, yes, Mayor Walters. Dinner? I'd be delighted. City club at 8? Huh? A car at my disposal while I'm in town? Well, that's very thoughtful. Very thoughtful of you, Your Honor. Fine. 8 o'clock, then. Goodbye, Mayor Walters.
How do you like that? The mayor?
Yeah, I'll have to have some dinner clothes. Other clothes, too. We both will.
Well, how? We haven't got a thin dime between us, remember?
Our credit's established at the hotel. We'll outfit ourselves at the local stores and charge everything to our account here. We'll simply say our luggage has gone astray.
Vix, when you're on the beam like this, you're wonderful.
And His Honor is putting a city car at my disposal. Perhaps I'll take Anne O'Hara riding in the country tomorrow.
And you're telling me not to worry.
Naturally, there's nothing to worry about. Come on, Lippincott, we're going shopping for a wardrobe. I wonder if she'd like me in tweeds.
So the curtain falls on the first act of today's radio drama, Love Can Happen to Anybody, starring William Lundigan and brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Before we return to the second act, here's Carnation's home service director, Mary Blake, with a copy of Life magazine in her hand. What are you reading, Mary?
Something everybody ought to refer to, Art. That is, everybody who's interested in good food.
Well, that's me.
Well, right here in the latest Life magazine, that's the issue with Eisenhower's wedding picture on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
On page 58, it shows the difference between ordinary custard and custard made with Carnation evaporated milk.
We return now to the second act of Love Can Happen to Anybody, starring William Lundigan in the role of Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby.
Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby, one of the smoothest get-rich-quick promoters in the business, has sold himself to the citizens of Midvale as a big-time financier. But his pal, Lippincott, is worried. It appears Bixby has fallen for Ann O'Hara, the girl who is acting as his secretary.
Do you want to sign these letters now, Mr. Bixby?
Yes, Ann. Please take a wire. Mr. Amos B. Pringle, Department of Subsidies, Washington, D.C., have made a thorough survey and find Midvale ideal for projected plane factory. I recommend that...
Oh, Mr. Bixby, I've been wondering exactly what an important man like you was doing in Midvale. Of course, the whole town's buzzing with rumors, but an airplane factory. Well, I suppose I'm especially interested because, you see, my brother Don's a flyer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. He's quite an inventor, too. He's working on a new type ship out at the airport now. I wish you'd look at it sometime.
Why, I'll be glad to. I'll tell you what. Ann, after we get this wire off, it's such a lovely day. Let's take a ride out to the airport and look over your brother's plane.
Hmm? Oh, that'd be wonderful, Mr. Bixby.
Have the car brought around, will you, Lippincott?
Very good, sir.
So you see, Mr. Bixby, with this new wing design, my ship can take off at high speed almost perpendicularly.
Mm-hmm. Something like a helicopter, eh?
Yes, but without the slowness and clumsiness of a helicopter.
Well, I really believe you have something done.
I'm sure he has.
I wish my creditors thought so. They're threatening to sick the sheriff on me. I'd like to give you an actual demonstration of what my ship can do, but as you can see, Mr. Bixby, I've got the motor torn apart right now.
Well, I'll look it over some other time. And we'd better get back to town.
All right. Bye, Don.
So long, sis. Bye, Mr. Bixby.
Me seeing you, Don. Jump in, Ann.
Thank you.
Oh, I've enjoyed the ride out here today.
Mm-hmm. Countryside around Midvale is lovely, isn't it?
You're lovely, too, Ann.
Why, Mr. Bixby?
I wish I could say a lot of things, Ann, but I can't.
I think I understand. A man in your position and a girl like me.
Uh-huh. That's just it, Ann. A girl like you and a man like me. Lippy, I'm in love with Ann O'Hara.
I knew it. I knew it. Bix, are you nuts?
I must be.
Listen, Bix, you got no business falling in love with Ann or anybody else. Get wise to yourself.
I know. It's crazy, but I can't help it.
Mr. Bixby, the mayor and his party have arrived. They're in the next room.
All right, Ann.
May I speak with you for a moment?
Yes, of course. You go ahead, Lippincott. Explain to the mayor and his friends about the ground leases we're going to take up and the bids we'll want from building contractors. I'll be in directly.
Yes, Mr. Bixby.
Mr. Bixby,
mm-hmm.
I have a great favor to ask you.
Yes, Ann?
Well, my brother Don just phoned. The sheriff's going to attach his plane unless he pays up what he owes on it. I know it's just a trifle to you, but I want to borrow $400 from you right away.
$400?
Yes, and I've got to have it right now. Now, you've seen the plane and realize
mm-hmm.
its possibilities. Well, Don can make a fortune out of that ship if he has half a chance.
Yes, I know.
Then you lend me the money?
Well, you see, I can't let you have it right now.
You won't let me have $400.
Well, it's like this, Ann, not this minute, you see.
Never mind, we'll manage somehow. I'm sorry I asked you, Mr. Bixby. Oh, Ann O'Hara, you're a silly little fool. Mr. Bixby's in conference at present.
Oh, he is he? Well, ain't that nice, no?
May I ask your name and the nature of your business?
You may. My name's Gehagan, Ironhead Gehagan, the boys call me, and I'm a cop. And the nature of my business is to throw that crook in the clink.
How dare you call Mr. Bixby a crook? He's a financier and one of the most...
Go on. Him and that sidekick of his ain't got a biscuit between them.
Oh, I don't...
You don't know that this guy Bixby is the smoothest, confidence man in 48 states. And I got the papers to make a pinch all nice and legal.
Oh, this is awful.
So if you'll just lead me to Bixby and his pal Lippincott, I'll take him for a ride to the Calaboose. Come on now.
Yes, of course.
Well, let's go. Get moving, sister.
Right this way, Mr. Gehagan.
Yes. Hey, hey, let me out of here. Let me out of this closet.
In a few minutes, Mr. Iron Hat Gahagan.
Thank you for your check, gentlemen. Stock certificates will be mailed to you within a day or so.
Bixby, I must see you at once. Nothing of the utmost importance. Could you step out for a moment, please?
Certainly, certainly. Pardon me, gentlemen.
Certainly.
There's a detective by the name of Gahagan after you.
Gahagan?
But it's all right. I've got him locked in a closet.
In a closet? What did you do that for? You'll get into trouble.
You've got to get out of town right away. Please, go, please.
You know what I am, and you still want me to help me, Ann? Now, listen to me. I love you. I'd give anything in the world if things were only different.
Oh, I love you, too. No matter what you are, what you've done, I love you.
Ann, wait. I've got an idea. Here, take these checks. You go in there and tell Lippy to meet me downstairs. I'll have the car. Let Gahagan out after we've gone. Tell him I'll call him up in 15 minutes. There may still be a way out of this mess. Now, hurry up, darling, hurry up.
Now, Mr. Gahagan, you're going to wear holes in that carpet pacing the floor that way.
Well, I had no business believing Bixby yesterday when he phoned and said he'd give himself up within 24 hours.
Well, the 24 hours aren't up yet. Oh, excuse me, miss. Yes?
Ann, it's Bixby. I'm in Washington. Now, listen carefully. Tell Gahagan I'm going to be a few hours late. Don flew me here, and we demonstrated his ship to the Army, and so, help me, they're going to recommend a government subsidy to erect a factory to build his plane in Midvale.
Oh, darling, that's wonderful.
They checked with Mayor Walters, and when they learned that the citizens of Midvale were 100% behind me, it was a breeze.
Oh, no one but you could have put it over.
Tell Gahagan I'm flying back. I'll be seeing you, sweet. I love you.
Oh, Gahagan, you precious old doll. Isn't he terrific?
No, you little minx. Take your arms from around me, neck. Do you hear me? Take your arms from around me, neck.
I'm ready to pay for all the fast ones I've ever pulled, Gahagan. I'm just asking you not to lower the boom on me when we get to court.
Don't forget that from now on, Jeremiah Thaddeus Bixby is going to have me look after him. He'll go straight the rest of his life.
Give us a break, Iron Hat.
I'm prepared to make restitution to Swanson and anyone else I've ever swindled.
And how are you going to make restitution? You ain't got a bean in the world.
Don's declared me a full partner in the aircraft factory for having put over the deal. I'll trade my Gildare's aviation stock for every share of phony stock I've ever sold.
Oh, come on, be a good Irishman, Gahagan. Give Jeremiah a chance to prove himself.
Well, I won't ask to have the book thrown at him. I'll agree to go that far. But Bixby, so help me, if you so much as go through our red light, I'll have you put away for life.
Don't worry, Gahagan. I'll be watching my step every foot of the way.
And I'll see that he keeps in step all the way down the aisle.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring William Lundigan. In just a moment, we'll have news about next week's show. Meantime, how about a curtain call, William Lundigan?
Right, Art. And let me tell you what a lot of fun this has been for me to be playing on Stars Over Hollywood.
Well, fun for you, but good listening for us then, Bill. And there's no reason why this mutual enjoyment shouldn't continue.
Hmm? How do you mean, Art?
Well, join me in a cup of coffee creamed with carnation, Bill. And you won't have to ask that question. Carnation evaporated milk in coffee always means pleasure. And now, Bill, for your fine performance today, here is a bouquet to take home to your lovely wife. Red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of carnation evaporated milk.
Well, they're beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you very much, Art. Now, what about next week's show?
Well, our star on next Saturday's Stars Over Hollywood show will be Jan Sterling.
Fine, fine. What's the story about?
Well, Jan is playing a girl who wants to be glamorous and does something about it. The play's called A Dime a Dozen.
Well, I'll be listening. But for now, it's goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bill Lundigan. The story on today's Stars Over Hollywood was written by Edward Verdier. Supporting Mr. Lundigan were Doris Singleton, Sidney Miller, Ken Christie, Peter Leeds, and Don Diamond. Music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey, and the program was directed by Don Clark.
when you shop for groceries today, be sure to have Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk, on your shopping list. And now for the Carnation Company and Stars Over Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger suggesting that you be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Tune in every Saturday and hear the world's greatest motion picture stars in person on Stars Over Hollywood. Next Saturday, we're proud to present that glamorous dramatic actress, Jan Sterling, in A Dime a Dozen. Stars Over Hollywood presents in person such famous stars as Joan Crawford, Cornell Wilde, Nancy Olsen, John Payne, Joanne Drew. Stars Over Hollywood brings to you in person actors whom you've seen in motion pictures and heard on radio. Actors whom you know. For the world's greatest stars presented in person, here's Stars Over Hollywood every Saturday. Stay tuned now for Grand Central Station, which follows immediately over most of these stations. Mr. Lundigan appeared through the kind permission of 20th Century Fox Film Corporation, producers of The Pride of St. Louis, starring Dan Daly and Joanne Drew. Stars Over Hollywood comes to you from our Hollywood studios and is heard in Canada over the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Stars Over Hollywood, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 26, 1952 on CBS, featuring movie actor William Lundigan in the title role. He wasn't seen on the silver screen in that year, presumably filming four 1953 releases of Inferno, Serpent of the Nile, and Down Among the Sheltering Palms. Lundigan, a Syracuse, New York native, actually got his start in motion pictures by way of radio. He was working at station WFBL in Syracuse when a production head at Universal Studios heard him on the air. He was so taken with his voice that he brought him to Hollywood for screen tests and ended up starring in many motion pictures, including some 1940s Looney Tunes cartoons, where he was the narrator. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now stage and screen stars Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin appear in The Marriage, this December 6th, 1953 NBC broadcast called Liz Takes Up Painting.
Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage. The sponsors of this program offer no endorsement of the opinions, philosophy, stubbornness, or confusion of the persons represented therein. However, with the conviction that marriage remains the most popular domestic arrangement between friendly people, NBC takes pleasure in presenting by transcription one of the most distinguished couples of the American theater, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as Liz and Ben Marriott in the new dramatic series, The Marriage.
In the late Renaissance, so I'm told, families passed the evening with eight-part madrigals, string quartets, and the reading of epic poetry. Well, the Marriott living room is not exactly Florentine, but evenings at home occasionally do have a Renaissance touch. The other night, Pete sat on the floor creating with affectionate detail a 1906 Overland runabout. Emily was staring out of the window at the brick wall across the way, seeking exactly the right word for a literary effort, while Ben did the double acrostic from the Sunday Times. The Da Vinci atmosphere unfortunately stopped with me.
Hey, look out.
Lift your feet.
What are you doing?
Dusting.
Down there?
The club chair, even as you and I, has feet. Lion paws, as a matter of fact.
Lion paws? Ah, I never noticed. They are, aren't they?
This lion has come overland through the Sahara.
Do you have to do that now?
Why not?
Who is the right-hand man of Edward the Confessor?
Who wants to know?
The puzzle. I tried Athelstane and Ethelbert. They didn't fit.
I'm not surprised. Pete, can you move some of that debris?
Why, Mom?
I'm dusting.
Now?
Do you mind?
No, it's all right with me.
Thank you.
Mom, was the clutch on the 1906 Overland on the left or on the right?
Ask your father, dear. He was always the expert on clutching. Oh, dear. The radiator's starting.
Ethelred, Ethelbert, Adelpate.
Oh, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it bother you?
Certainly does. Edward the Confessor. Ah.
I mean the radiator.
The radiator? Oh, it's warm enough in here.
I mean the banging.
Oh, that.
I don't see how you can concentrate on anything with that knocking.
Oh, it's just a matter of being interested.
I don't even hear it. Didn't hear a thing.
Well, I think it's nerve-wracking.
Oh, I don't know. It's got a lot of rhythm. Two to tango, two to tango. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Olé!
Well, I think it's awful. It's like living on the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. I'm going to get Mr. Lemberg up here to have him do something. Mr. Lemberg is a sweet old gentleman with a soup strainer mustache and bushy gray hair. He's the superintendent of our building, and he fights a losing battle with the machine age. I asked him to come up the next afternoon. The radiators were playing Stravinsky's Rites of Spring when he rang the buzzer. All right, Mr. Lemberg.
You want me, Mrs. Marriott?
Come in, Mr. Lemberg.
Thank you.
It's the radiators.
You don't get enough steam?
Oh, yes, yes. They rattle.
They do?
They bang terribly.
Oh. I don't hear nothing.
Well, they were firing a fusillade till you came in. They're just hiding in ambush now.
Oh, yeah, Mrs., I understand. Them radiators are sneaky.
Yes, they are. Did you notice
that? Oh, sure. They probably knew I was coming.
I didn't mention
it. No, they got ways. Remember, there is pipes running through the whole building.
I've often worried about that.
Mrs., they know them radiators. If I'm in my good suit on Sunday, bang, 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 bang. All I gotta do is change in the overalls and hold up a wrench. Nothing.
It doesn't seem quite honest, does it?
Sneaky.
It's a little like our refrigerator door.
Oh, you got trouble with that?
Oh, it sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
If you're bending way over to get something way in the back, it sort of sidles up behind you and... Oh.
It's cold, yeah. The radiators are the worst.
Ours seems awfully clever.
Yeah, smart, them radiators. Always thinking.
Do you think we have a chance against them?
Listen, Mrs., they got their job. We got ours. We got to keep trying.
Even though we're outnumbered?
Yes, yes. Well, we fool them. Next time they start up, you send for me right away.
I won't say anything out loud.
You bet. We get them, Mrs. Well, goodbye.
Thank you, Mr. Lemberg.
That's all right. Oh, Mrs. Marriott, you going to do washing today?
Why, yes, I was.
Well, look out for that washing machine on the left. It's been mad all morning. So mad. I don't know why. It always used to be so friendly. Well, goodbye, Mrs.
By supper time, the radiators had settled down to sporadic small arms fire. Ben and the children were quite conspiratorial all through dinner. I couldn't imagine why till after.
Mommy, we've got a surprise for you.
I got it. Here it is.
What is it?
Open it. I haven't seen it myself.
Oh, you shouldn't have done it.
I wanted to.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Painter mat kit.
See, Mom? Open the box.
What is it?
Canvas for painting pictures.
But it's all written on.
Well, don't you see? The picture's all ready for you. All these little lines show where the colors go. See, every section is numbered.
It looks like a map of a housing project.
The paint has numbers, too.
Hey, that's clever, isn't it?
Oh, you shouldn't have done it. Believe me, Ben, you shouldn't have.
We thought it would be just the thing for you, Mommy. They're complete instructions.
The man said a child of 6 could follow them.
Left a small margin for safety, eh?
Now, Liz, it's a start.
Well, you can't go wrong.
The pictures are pre-tested on children of 6.
Do you think maybe I'd be too old?
Oh, no, Mother. Gosh, look at Grandma Moses. This can give you a creative outlook.
It's foolproof.
And I'm just a fool to prove it.
Mom, don't you like it?
Oh, of course I do, darling. It was very sweet of both of you. Of all three of you. It was very sweet of the children. And in a way, they were quite right. I used to put a lot of creative energy into my job. And then when the kids were young, that was a big undertaking and a satisfying one. But now when they didn't need me every minute, perhaps I tended to lose myself in things like dusting. I did need some way to be creative.
Pete's right. The instructions do say a child of six could follow them.
Ben, Marriott, you put them up to this.
No, I didn't. Emily said they wanted to buy you some painting things. I didn't know they had a paint-a-mat in mind.
Paint-a-mat?
I think it's very clever.
Well, I'm afraid I've got to do one of them. The kids would be heartbroken if I don't. What have we got?
Let's see. Sunset at sea. Night watch. End of the trail. And the Court of Nero.
I'll try that. I'd like to see a picture of the Court of Nero that was pre-tested on six-year-old children. Old Grandma Marriott went at it. I squeezed the tiniest cube of number 76, which turned out to be a sort of mud green, and carefully filled in face 76, which turned out to be a section of anatomy of one of the court ladies. The paint-a-mat company evidently was privy to several extremely advanced six-year-olds. To tell you the truth, I enjoyed it, in spite of the instructions. The next day, on my way home from the supermarket, I wandered into the community center.
Can I help you?
I'd like to ask about painting.
Oh, of course. Now, which kind would you like? Sketch, water, oils, pastels, landscape, and life. You have to be married for life.
Well, I didn't know you were so strict. My marriage is fairly stable, but you never can tell, can you?
No. I mean life class. They use models, so we have to be careful.
I understand. I think that's a little advanced for me. Do you have anything for beginners?
Oh, yes. That's our Mr. Dandria. He's on television.
I didn't know they had artists on television.
Oh, yes. Yes, he draws Dickie the Weatherbird for the Midnight Weather Report.
He sounds formidable.
Oh, no. Mr. Dandria is wonderful with beginners. He makes it so simple. Why, it could be followed by a six-year-old child.
I could see that the art world was hep to my level. Wherever I turned, I was immediately classified with the other six-year-olds. I signed up for the class and bought a small set of oils, brushes, and charcoal. The family was very understanding.
Now, remember to button your smock up to the neck, Mom. That's the blouse I want to borrow this weekend.
I'll try to be careful.
Mom, can I give you some advice?
Of course, Pete.
Listen in class.
Yes.
And do what the teacher says.
I'll try.
It pays off.
I'm sure it does. Well, I suppose I might as well go.
Liz, wait a minute.
Did I forget something?
Let me look at you.
Why?
Whenever I see them go off to school for the first time, I just get a big lump right here.
You look out or I'll give you a big lump somewhere else. And so, with head held high, a furtive tear lurking in my eye, I braved the new world of the community center adult beginners art class. We all perched on high stools in front of our easels and waited for the master. My neighbor on the right was a large, cheerful woman, Mrs. Joachim.
And so I told Max, you put the kids to bed. Tonight, I'm going to learn painting. He says to me, what do you want to learn painting for? You're another Toulouse-Lautrec? Isn't that silly?
It certainly is.
I don't even look like Jose Ferrer.
Have you ever painted before?
I couldn't even draw a straight line. Actually, I come to see Mr. Dandria. Do you think he looks like on television?
I've never seen him on television. Is he handsome?
I don't know. All you see is his left wrist when he draws the weather bird. He has very attractive knuckles.
That's half the battle, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, here he is.
You recognize the wrist?
Who else would wear a beard and a Scotch plaid beret? Mr. Dandria. He hung his red serape on a hat rack and started right in.
Now then, everybody. 3/4 of the way up the paper, about 4 inches from the left-hand side,
Draw a small circle. Ready? Like this.
Oh. There. Oh, look at that, a small circle. Oh, Max should be here.
Mr. Danvier.
Questions later.
What are we drawing?
Don't worry, Mrs.
Marriott.
I've never lost a student yet.
I don't like to be surprised.
Inhibited, Mrs. Marriott?
Yes. A weak heart.
Well, I won't keep you in suspense. The first drawing is Dickie the Weatherbird.
Oh, that's wonderful. Dickie the Weatherbird.
Mr. Danvier went on. We drew by numbers. Circles, squares, wavy lines. Hop, top, thrup, four. And eventually, on 12 easels, there were 12 exact reproductions of a scrawny chicken with windblown wattles. Ben was waiting up for me when I got home.
How'd it go?
Fine. Fine. Anytime you want a drawing of Dickie the Weatherbird, feel free to call on me.
How'd you like it?
I was expelled.
Expelled?
Really, Ben. It was as ridiculous as that awful painter mat, and I told him so.
What did you say?
He invented the painter mat. The family took my expulsion from art class philosophically. Pete even restrained himself from saying, I told you so. Gradually, the specter of Mother as Grandma Moses faded. But now, I had a guilty secret. In the daytime, when everybody was safely occupied with the world's affairs, I plied my clandestine art. I had sniffed the heady aroma of turpentine, and I was hooked. Presumably, I would soon be injecting it directly into an artery. Once I was caught red-handed, well, blue-handed, as a matter of fact, a cobalt blue.
What are you doing, lady?
Huh? Oh, how did you get in?
Lundberg let me in with the passkey. I'm the plumber.
Oh, the plumber.
Mind if I set my tools down?
Are you supposed to fix the radiator?
Yeah. How do you like that? Radiators after all these years.
You don't like radiators?
Oh, it ain't that. I can take them and let them alone. You see, lady, I'm a sink man.
A sink man?
Lady, I can tell what a sink is stopped up with just by listening to the gurgle.
I used to be able to do that with a baby.
It's much the same. Except, of course, them new garbage machines on the drain.
That would be a little complex.
Oh, it isn't that. I keep losing fountain pens down them. You know, lean over to look at the sink. The pen falls out of your pocket. That's all.
We don't have one.
Besides one of those machines, you identify your garbage. Maybe you got company in the front room. All of a sudden, they hear... They know what you threw in that machine.
They do? Sounds like a great parlor game. Well, I don't want to keep you from your work. I'll just go on with what I'm doing.
What?
What do you mean,
Well, lady, a yellow cow is unnatural.
Look, young man. If I want to paint it puce with cinnamon stripes, that's my affair. I've had enough art instruction. If I want advice about stuffed sinks, I'll come to you. But in the meantime, I'll stuff my own sink. I mean, I'll paint my own picture.
Well, okay, lady. Don't get sore. If you want to make it a jurisdictional dispute, okay.
Let's leave it that way.
Okay. Whoever heard of a yellow cow?
It was a few weeks later that I was exposed. Emily was rummaging in the storage closet looking for ice skates when she turned up my hidden hoard of canvases. She brought them out into the living room, all tied together.
Daddy, look what I found.
Emily, you put those back.
What are they?
Well, canvas boards for paintings.
Liz, those yours? You've really been painting. That's wonderful.
Oh, they're nothing, really. What's on television?
Hey, kids, we're going to have a one-woman show. Pete? Let me hear Scout and I.
Sure, Pop.
Now, stop it, Ben.
I think it's very exciting. Emily, Pete, everybody, let's sit down.
Oh, well, they're nothing, really.
Let's see.
Well, all right. You see, I wanted to paint some of the things I remembered when I was a little girl. You know, the country. The old houses. The farm animals next door. I mean, anybody can paint them better, but I'm the only one who remembers them the way I do. The whole thing seemed to be slipping away from me. And I did want you to understand. The children, too.
Let's see what they look like. There.
Well, now, this is the barn at the Slocums next door.
Uh-huh.
This one is the old house, the rock in front. We used to sit on that and pretend it was a throne. And this is... Don't you like them?
Oh, they're very nice, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very interesting.
Oh, yes. Well, it's the kind of thing Norman Rockwell draws for the Saturday Evening Post. Don't you just love his drawings? I mean, they're so real.
But these are not supposed to be real. I was just remembering.
Oh, of course, dear. It's been a long time.
I could draw better when I was 5.
Pete.
Well, I could. A yellow cow?
Now, Liz, pay no attention to that. These are... They're... you know, the chimney isn't in the right perspective. Would you like me to show you about the vanishing point and parallel receding line?
No, I don't care about perspective. As a matter of fact, I'm sick of the whole business.
Where are you going?
I'm going to throw them all in the trash can.
No, wait a minute, Liz.
I'm all through with them anyway.
Oh, wait a minute.
I have fun of painting them. I knew what I was thinking of, even if nobody else did.
Liz, these were your first paintings. Naturally, they're a little... But they're very nice. I'm sure you'll improve with practice.
What's the use? Pete could draw better when he was 5. There. Now let's forget about the whole thing. They were all very nice to me. They took me out to dinner to Emily's favorite restaurant. And we all had Pete's favorite food to cheer me up. Ben added to the celebration with a movie in the evening, which he'd been very anxious to see. It was Moulin Rouge, which I thought was most appropriate. All about poor Toulouse-Lautrec who wanted to paint. But Mrs. Joachim was wrong. She looked exactly like José Ferrer. About a week later, things were back to normal in the Marriott Menage.
Hey, look out.
Lift your feet.
You just dusted this chair.
That was 2 weeks ago. Lift.
I thought they were supposed to be fixed.
They were. Oh, Ben, this is too much. It's ridiculous. I'm going down to get Mr. Lemberg right now.
All right.
I'll get rid of that banging if they have to rip out the whole steam system and go back to a pot-bellied stove. I marched down the stairs to the rhythm of the pipes playing a farandole, which increased in tempo as I went along. So by the time I rang Mr. Lemberg's door, I was short of breath and shorter of temper.
Yeah? Oh, Mrs. Marriott.
Mr. Lemberg.
I know, Mrs. It's the radiator sandwich. Well, they stopped. I just got out the wrench.
You've got to do something, Mr. Lemberg. They're just sitting there trying to drive me crazy.
Like in the movies, yeah. Nobody believes you, as I understand. Well, I get my tools, Mrs. Oh, come in, sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Lemberg.
I'll be ready in a moment.
I stepped into Mr. Lemberg's basement apartment and stopped short. There, on the walls, in the most beautiful carved wood frames, were my pictures. All of them.
Well, I'm all ready now, Mrs.
Mr. Lemberg, those pictures...
Oh, yeah. Funny thing. I found them in the trash. Somebody just threw them away. I had these frames. My father was a woodcarver in the old country. They just fit, don't they?
Mr. Lemberg, you like these pictures?
Well, I tell you, Mrs. Marriott, I'm in this country maybe 30 years. I'm a citizen. My son was in the army in the war. But still, you got to remember how it was when you were a little fella. You know?
I know.
I saw those pictures in the trash, and right away I remembered. Now, look. Those hills could be the Schwarzwald when I was a little boy. Well, not exactly, but that's the way I remember it. And in the bright sun, the cows look yellow. With the trees big, very big.
And the shadows very black.
and terrified.
Yeah, and that village, well, that village could be Dittersdorf, just like I remember. The houses looked like people.
Fat little people with staring eyes.
Yeah.
And the church tower like a tall, thin schoolmaster.
That's it, yeah, just like Herr Schnabel. Mrs., was you ever in Dittersdorf?
No. No, not exactly.
Mrs., I give you one.
Oh, no.
Listen, why not? Somebody threw them in the trash. Why shouldn't you enjoy them?
But Mr. Lemberg, with the frame.
Oh, I got lots more. Papa was always carving. You should see the kitchen chairs. Here, Mrs. Mrs., you take this picture. Eh?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Lemberg. Oh, you don't know what a wonderful present this is.
So, now we get them crazy radiators.
The Marriage is an NBC radio production directed by Edward King. This is Bob Denton speaking.
Mr. Lemberg had the pictures up on his wall?
Oh, he was so sweet. He said they reminded him of his childhood.
You know, Liz, looks fine hanging there.
It's a beautiful frame.
Reminds me of Central Park when I was a kid.
Oh, Ben. Oh, Ben, thank you. Good night.
Good night, darling.
Make kitchen chores lighter with music and drama on the NBC Radio Network.
The Marriage, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of December, 1953, an NBC episode. Wrapping up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.